live, Logan?
We're live.
We're live? Are you sure about this? Because if you lie to me, I will... Oh, hi, guys. It's your boy, ZDogMD. You will never believe where me, Logan, and Tom are today. We are in the heart, the belly of the beast, Watertown, Massachusetts, at Athena Health headquarters. Shazam! Okay? This is water, not vodka. The vodka's later. We're really excited because, as you guys know, Athena Health has been sponsoring this month, and we've sort of themed it Burnout Month. And we've been talking a lot about burnout for any kind of clinician, anyone on the front lines of healthcare. And the question now is, okay, is anyone actually studying burnout that can actually make a difference? And what difference can we make? So why are we burning out and what can we do to make it better? And the reason we decided to partner with Athena Health this month is because they are one of the few companies, especially in health IT, that's actually looking at why clinicians are burning out and trying to figure out ways to take stuff off our plate so we can free up to actually take care of patients. And it's a long process and it's not easy, but we're here to actually talk to one of their lead researchers about what the heck is going on and how do we make it better. And I got my girl, Jessica Sweeney Platt, up in the house. You know what I'm saying?
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I've had coffee this morning.
I've had coffee too. I'm not sure I've had enough.
Yeah, I know.
It is early.
Okay. We stayed at the Residence Inn Marriott. I'm convinced that any coffee in a room is nothing but a brown placebo in hotels.
Don't ever do in-room coffee.
But
they don't clean it.
Wait, what?
Yeah. That's a different conversation. We'll have that later. I'll fill you in.
I'm gonna throw up now because now I'm thinking about it and like. And you're not supposed to use their actual mugs, too, right? Because the cleaning ladies sometimes, or guys, will actually clean it with the same rag they use to clean the toilets.
Well, it depends if you left them a tip the night before. If you did, then you're good.
You're supposed to tip housekeepers?
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
Could you tell us about your background? How did you get
into it? I travel a lot.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah.
Okay, so I have somewhat I'm probably the least likely person to be working for a healthcare IT company. I am I'm a researcher by nature. Uh-huh. I'm a research nerd, as I like to call myself. I've spent the better part of 20 years doing research into healthcare organizations and with a particular focus on the way talent is deployed and fostered and you know, made to feel safe and sustainable within those organizations.
Ah.
So I came to Athena a couple of years ago because I had this incredible opportunity to work with network data, the network data on Athena, to kind of understand what is it that makes healthcare work? What is it that makes a healthcare organization work, and what are the ways in which we can use that insight to kind of teach the rest of the industry what to do and how to do it?
And so it's interesting because you guys have to understand, so Athena has, obviously they make an electronic health record, but they have a network of a lot of providers, right?
100,000 plus.
100,000 mm-hmm. plus. Okay, now imagine you have access to all the data generated by those providers, and you can actually mine it for information. Mm-hmm. Prescribing patterns, what might be causing us to suffer, what organizations perform better and why, who supports their staff, who supports their nurses and doctors and who doesn't, and does that actually affect outcomes? Jessica actually studied this because she's a research nerd, and the results are actually really fascinating. So what did you guys do? You did a survey?
Yep. Yeah. So there's a lot that we can see in our data, mm-hmm. right? We can see keystrokes and clicks, and we can learn things about the way a practice manages its revenue cycle. We can learn about the ways that doctors and nurses use the tools and use the system. There are some things that we can't see, and so we supplement that data with actual real-world surveys.
Survey data,
data. So we surveyed 1,000 physicians. This was a physician-specific survey, but I think it's an interesting conversation as to
is it applicable?
How it applies
more
broadly, exactly. So we surveyed about 1,000 physicians because we wanted to understand, you know, how they feel about the practice of medicine and their experience in working within their organizations today.
Mm.
You know, this is part of a larger research effort that we're doing to understand kind of what makes a healthcare provider organization work. So if we know that we need ultimately both financial and clinical results, and we want those things to be positive. What are the things that the organization has to be able to provide in order to make that happen?
Right. And for those of you who are saying, because I know you are, well, this is more MBA speak of like financial performance and RVUs and what does it have to do with us? I think what Jessica points out and what I learned working with Athena is that, no, this is absolutely essential because medicine is a business, a science, and an art. And right now, we've skewed so heavily towards the business and the science that we've lost the art. And part of what the survey shows is that when clinicians actually feel like they're supported on the business and the science side, they're able to practice the art. So this all deeply relates to what we're calling Health 3.0. Mm-hmm. And by the way, just so you know, Tom is here.
What's up?
And I'm running comments in the corner.
He's running comments. Do you have any comments so far?
Yeah, I have a good one. Randallin says, the YMCA now uses Athena as their medical record system for the YMCA's diabetes prevention program. The Y is moving into the healthcare world, y'all. It's fun to stay at the
YMCA.
You told me there would be no singing.
I never promised that. I did this when I... okay. Anyway, so the survey. So tell me, how did you... So he's 1,000 docs, and the methodology was what through... Was it through the Athena software, or was it...
It was not through the Athena software. We did this... It was an email-based online survey. And we were asking... It was a long one. We're very grateful to the people who took the time to answer these questions.
Here we are talking about how do we take things off your plate.
Exactly.
Here's a long survey.
Exactly. I would do it differently now, perhaps, with the benefit of hindsight. But we were asking about... things like how do you feel about the practice of medicine? Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the future direction of healthcare? We asked about practice and sort of organization-specific things like leadership and access to tools and resources. We asked a couple of questions that sort of helped us to get at this issue of burnout, but then we also asked questions that helped us to sort of see what are some of the other things that we can be looking at as well.
Right, and I looked at the results of this, mm-hmm. and this was something, so when Athena and I were talking early on, we were like, well, so what do you guys want to, you know, be with us for a month talking about burnout, why? And they explained to me what they were doing, and I was like, oh, this is a thing. Because what they actually found in this survey is not... In many ways, it's not counterintuitive at all, but it actually drills down into this idea of what business guys call capability. Capability sounds really weird in medicine because you think, oh, you mean my ability to take care of patients, like how smart I am, how good of a surgeon I am, how well I do rectal exams and catch early prostate cancer. Like, is that capability? Because that's how we're conditioned. Or as a nurse, the capability to manage multiple patients with minimum staffing, those kind of things. It's less that. What they're talking about is, do you feel like you have professional autonomy and latitude to take care of patients the way you know from your training and your experience that you should? Do you have the tools and the resources, in other words, the technology and the staffing and the human resources, to actually do your job without feeling overwhelmed every single minute? And do you have good leadership and support to do this stuff? And it turns out that your data actually, to me, was unsurprising. But I mean, what did you guys find?
Yeah, so this was, in all honesty, one of the most exciting projects that I've had the privilege of working on.
And you are a serious nerd.
I'm a total nerd,
yeah.
And I have to own that.
And I have to like that, yeah.
let me just kind of put it in context of some of the other stuff that we're doing. So I said that we're trying to understand sort of a comprehensive theory for performance. And I just said theory, and I realize that sounds really...
And performance.
And performance.
Business people.
I know. I don't have an MBA, actually.
Oh, that's good. That's a plus.
I'm a history major.
Oh, sweet.
I'm an even bigger nerd. So what we're trying to understand is, okay, what makes an organization perform well? And then the research that we've been doing says that there need to be three things that an organization has. You have to have effective leadership at the top. Mm. You have to have providers and non-clinical staff who, to your point, feel capable of doing their jobs and have the tools and resources that they need to do their jobs to the highest level that they can. And then the third piece, which we haven't really looked at from a research perspective yet, but I'm really interested in, is we have to have patients who have the tools and resources and the capability to do their jobs, because, as you know, patients have a job to do.
Yeah, it's to yell at us. It's to threaten us physically.
Yeah.
And it's to be addicted to narcotics.
That's when they don't have the tools and resources that they need to do their
Thank
job,
you.
That that
Thank
happens.
You. Thank
but it's, but it's, you know, it's there's a lot of tough unpaid work in being a patient.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think we'd like to dig into at some point, but we haven't done that yet.
And you're going to.
I hope so.
I hope so, because I think that's a key component, the patient piece.
Yeah.
But here's you said a couple things, the leadership component.
Absolutely.
So what did you learn about leadership? Because I'll tell you, I was part of a big physician organization, and we had some of the greatest leadership where we felt supported by fellow clinicians who also had MBAs. Mm-hmm. So they were both. And they knew our pain, but they also led us in a direction that I felt was very productive.
Yeah.
We had a team, we were supported by people we felt were capable, and it made us feel capable.
Mm-hmm.
Now that changed over time.
Yeah.
And I felt that change, and as it changed, I felt less capable, less autonomous, less supported, and I felt our leadership was crap, and the next thing you know, I'm burned out and ready to leave.
Yeah.
So this sort of supports what you found, which is the organizations that had the most capable feeling physicians were the ones that felt their leaders were.
Yeah, so we asked a question. We said, do you believe that your leadership is the right, I can't remember the exact wording, but do you believe that
they
you
don't
have
suck.
The best possible leaders to lead your organization across the next 5 to 10 years? And the correlation between the folks who said, yes, our leaders are fantastic, and those who also met the criteria for the way we're thinking about capability. So do you have the latitude that you need to do to treat your patients in the way you think best? And do you have the tools and resources that you need to take care of your patients?
Mm.
The correlation between those things was off the charts.
And so, again, this is like New England Journal of duh.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It just but you have to study it, because when you have the data, then you can go to organizations and go, see?
Well, but here's here's the thing that I think is so important. You know, I spent some portion of my career working with heads of human resources in the corporate world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they think a lot about leadership. They think a lot about that. They invest a lot of money in leadership development. I think that's something that happens in healthcare, but we are significantly
behind,
underinvested in that. So you'll see it in larger organizations,
yeah.
But I think it's really important for small and mid-sized healthcare organizations to be thinking really intentionally about leadership and leadership development for physicians and for everyone.
So I'm going to take that a step further. So you guys, when we had Robbie Pearl, the former CEO of Kaiser, he is a really smart guy.
Yeah.
We had a conversation about leadership, and he agreed that grooming the next generation of leaders, and they have to be, they really have to be clinicians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, directors of nursing, physicians, physical therapists, it doesn't matter, but they should probably have touched patients. The idea that we underappreciate this, as Jessica's saying, that we don't grow our leaders, and so what happens? We import them from the business world, and they suck, because they don't know what it is to be on the front line. So we have to grow that. And it's the small organizations mm-hmm. that have struggles with that. Like, a Kaiser has resources to develop leaders,
mm-hmm.
but what does the clinic, the small multi-specialty practice across the street have? Much less.
Well, so this was what was so interesting. So we've done not only quantitative research, we've done some qualitative research. So when we can see that an organization on our network is performing really well, I or someone on my team will get on the phone and say, hey, what are you doing? You know, you're looking really good here. Tell us a little bit about how you're doing things. And it's been one of the things that came out of those conversations was that even small organizations, I remember talking to a 10 physician or a 10 provider, sorry, primary care practice, and they talked about the fact that they had sort of, I wouldn't call them formal leadership roles, because that's probably overstating it, but they were thinking in an intentional way about leadership and about the ways in which their providers, their nurse practitioners and their doctors were developing the skills that they need to run the organization as medicine and as healthcare becomes more complex.
Mm.
And I thought that was so interesting, because you think about that in terms of larger organizations, but this was a 10 provider practice.
I mean, really think about that. Like, the concept of leadership in a small group having a difference in the culture, in the feeling of capability to take care of patients, and burnout. So burnout ultimately
how does it relate to this idea of capability, feeling supported and all that? What did you notice in that study?
So one of the things, so let me just talk a little bit about what capability, I'm going to go a little bit deeper into what capability is and why we think it's important. So we worked with some advisors from, and I'm you know, this may ruin any credibility that I have with your audience, but from Harvard Business School.
Oh, why?
Well, but here's why. So,
This guy
is absolutely brilliant. His name is Len Schlesinger, and he has written an enormous amount.
That really sounds like a thought leader name. Like, hi, I'm Len Schlesinger.
Could it be any more of a thought leader
name? It really
could. It could not.
Yeah.
Okay, so Len has done decades worth of work with service industry businesses, mm-hmm. right? Healthcare is a service business. It is a different kind of service. No, it is. It is. I know. It's different.
She's right, though.
So he's worked with non-healthcare service businesses, and he came up with this sort of body of work that talks about the things that let service businesses do well. Mm. And one of the important concepts that came out of his research was this idea of capability, that the people on the front line of a business, of an organization, need to have the latitude to do their to treat their customers or their patients the way they know is right. Mm-hmm. They need to have the tools and resources, and they need to have the motivation. And he was interested in saying in learning, does this apply to healthcare? Mm-hmm. Knowing that healthcare is different, does this apply? And so that was sort of one of the reasons why we did this survey. And so as we were designing the survey, we realized, you know, motivation is an issue for frontline retail workers. Like you have to, it's not really an issue for physicians, I don't think, or for clinical staff. No one questions whether they're motivated to take care of their patients, right?
Whereas serving up a latte, you really have to ask yourself, is this where I want to be right now?
Exactly.
And it might be.
So our definition of capability focused really on those latter two things, on do I have the degree of freedom that I need mm-hmm. to take care of patients the way I know is right, mm-hmm. and do I have the tools and resources that I need mm-hmm. to do that work? If you answer, so we asked, you know, 6-point Likert scale questions. We asked questions. If you agreed with those statements, then you met our criteria for capability. And I think it's super important. I want to reiterate something that you said, which is that we're not talking about clinical capability here, right? I'm not trying to say that this doctor is a good doctor and this doctor is not a good doctor.
Right.
It is this doctor thinks that she has the tools and resources and the degree of freedom that she needs to do her job, and this doctor doesn't feel that way. And so let's look at the differences between those two.
Yeah.
Less than half mm. of the physicians in our survey felt that they had those things.
Less than half. Felt capable. Mm-hmm. Now, and that correlates to, according to your research mm-hmm. data, it correlates to the idea that they might leave their organization in the next few years.
So the survey respondents, and again, all of these were physicians, mm-hmm. I do think my hypothesis would be that this would apply as well to nurses, to nurse practitioners, to PAs, to physical therapists. Like, I think that there is something about those who are on the front lines of care.
Yeah.
I think you'd see some differences in certain areas, but,
right.
but anyway. If you met those criteria for capability, you were much less likely to say that you intended to leave your organization. Mm-hmm. So I think it was 4% of those who met the criteria for capability said that they intended to leave their organization within the next 3 years versus 17% who didn't meet the criteria.
And this makes perfect sense, right, Zipak? If you feel like you have the tools, the latitude to do your job, and your innate motivation, because as Jessica said, we just assume if you're in healthcare and you've paid your dues, which you have, to get there, you're motivated AF. You know what I mean? If assuming you're motivated, and it's not like a retail space, right? That's why I think we get so rankled mm-hmm. when they're like, these are customers and clients, not patients, and a hospital should be a hotel. We want to throat punch people. Mm-hmm. Because no, we didn't go into it to run a hotel. We went into it to help human beings, which is what we do. If we have the capability and the support and the capacity to do it, we're less likely to want to leave our organization. Our organization is more productive and financially successful, according to your data. Mm-hmm. And we often will feel like our leaders are doing a good job and so on, more connected and less burned out.
Well, I think about it in terms of what, in the way you talk about healthcare 3.0, the rehumanizing of
right.
healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the term you use. And I think that really was underscored in our survey. You know, there is the importance of leadership and the connection that there has to be between leadership and the people who are doing the work on the front line.
Yeah.
But there's also another interesting theme that came out of the survey was the importance of teams and the importance of that relationship. So we asked about do you think that the other clinical team members within your organization are, I can't remember the exact wording, but are they high quality?
Right.
We asked about whether non-clinical colleagues are, you know, have the resources that they need to do their jobs. And the more that the physicians in our survey agreed with those statements, the more that they said that yes, both the clinical and the non-clinical colleagues that I'm working with are high quality, mm-hmm. the more likely they were to feel like they had the tools and resources
so
to do their jobs.
Once again, all of this data supports the whole idea of Health 3.0, which mm-hmm. is good teams that are supported by great leadership have better outcomes, and if we're actually paid on outcomes, then it's a fantastic mm-hmm. thing, supported by technology, but not replaced or obstructed by it. So the whole idea, and this again gets to the reason, because people are like, wow, you have a sponsor for a whole month. Why did you do that? Mm-hmm. And the answer is because we try to find sponsors that are actually studying and caring about making our lives better. And that's why we're working with these guys, because that's what they're studying. Tom, you got some comments from the gallery?
One of the things I wanted to ask about is basically, like, we're always talking about the AI coming in and being a big part of the future. Like, with you and me, we have that conversation. But it's really not that the AI takes over, right? It's that the AI is physician assist. Like, they work together.
Exactly. And actually, one of the things that Athena is doing is they have this Athena Insights program with all this network data. Well, hey, guess what? We can actually learn practice patterns, things that work, things that don't. When are doctors prescribing opiates? When are they prescribing antibiotics inappropriately? And we can create a kind of a virtual AI using that data set that then supports clinicians right at the point they're taking care of people, so that we're evidence empowered, but never evidence enslaved. So at that point of care, the EHR might remind you, you know what, a lot of times right now, doctors are going to prescribe inappropriately an antibiotic, and it doesn't look like it fits this pattern. So just FYI, you do what you want, but we're just saying,
right.
You're going to cause C. diff and kill someone. And that is actually tremendously helpful, assuming it isn't obtrusive and messes up our workflow and makes us feel less capable.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, and I realize that I work for a healthcare IT company, so this may come off as completely self-serving. But, you know, technology is not where it needs to be to support caregivers. It's something that I know, you know, that we're working on. But to your point about AI, I think that there is, you know, we read a lot about the way that AI can help on the clinical side of care. One of the things that we're thinking about is how can AI help to relieve some of the administrative burden on both the caregiver and the practice as a whole. So you know, there's been a lot of research that shows the connection, the correlation between this sense of administrative burden and burnout. We saw the same thing in terms of, you know, the more you feel like you have, if you don't feel like you have enough time to spend with your patient, then you're less likely to meet the criteria for capability. So, you know, one of the ways in which we're thinking about using AI is to do things like take the burden of clinical documentation and filing all of those faxes and all of those things that, you know, the orders that come into the practice, and taking that off of the humans
mm-hmm.
so that they can do more. So that if you are, you know, a coder or a biller in an office, mm-hmm. you don't have to do that. Your skills and your talents can be redeployed to help, again, support that frontline effort of taking care patients.
That is brilliant. And this gets again to the punchline of this whole show, which is a perfect segue, which is knowing this data, knowing that physicians feel they don't have enough time. We talked about the MDVIP data in a previous show,
yeah.
and they're also partnered with you guys, this idea that 84% of physicians feel like they could have more time with patients, and that would be a darn good thing. They feel like they have too much, an administrative burden is one of the biggest problems. Now, the EHR so far has only made that worse for us, because it used to be we would just fill out some crappy forms and crappy handwriting and then get back to the patient. Now we're typing the whole time and clicking, clicking, clicking. So what do you think, so AI is a component of it, data is a component of it, robust technology is a component of it, and Athena's hope is to try to support that on the back end for practices?
Absolutely, this is an ongoing conversation within our organization, and I know across the industry. We're not where we need to be yet, and I don't think we would ever try and make that claim, but we are constantly adjusting the way the technology works, the workflows within the technology. I think I heard somewhere that we've seen something like a 20% reduction in after hours documentation time.
Ooh, that's key.
As a result of some of those changes, so that pajama time hopefully will be spent watching Netflix and not
binge watching Silicon Valley, which I've been doing.
That is such a great show.
And let me tell you something. Again, this is an aside, my friends, but you take away the clicks. I watched Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is the story of Turntable Health. I was watching going, oh my gosh. It's like working with Tony Hsieh, our investor. He's a big Silicon Valley guy. The idea that we're struggling with a name. We spend all this time trying to figure out a name. We come up with a logo in the end. It's just like, a turntable. I mean, the whole thing was so spot on. And the reason I got to watch it is I'm not clicking boxes in an EHR, mainly because I do much less clinical time and I make my house staff click. However, I have heard from people who've used Athena a couple things. One is that you suck and you have a long way to go. But the other thing I heard is that you're still better than most of the EHRs they've used, and it's almost like an iPhone, approaching the iPhone. So that means that you guys are doing something, you're trying something, you're getting better, and you admit that it's still a struggle, which is key.
I hope that's true. I know just from working here for the last couple of years that people feel really passionately.
Yeah.
That, this is a mission-driven organization.
Clearly.
And we want to make healthcare work the way it should. That's on all of our badges. That's on all of our ID badges. We are here to make healthcare work as it should. But wait, can I ask you a question?
Maybe. Depends. You know me, I'm pretty guarded publicly.
Yeah, exactly. So if... As you think about this idea of capability, getting latitude, having tools and resources, when you were spending most of your time in practice, what were the tools and resources that you didn't have that you wish you did?
Oh, well, we were using a very, I was there at Stanford, and I've told this story when our EHR went live, and I shall remain it unnamed in this context, but it is a large EHR that mostly considers its customers to be hospitals, not clinicians.
Yep. Yep.
And as a result, when that went live, I found that it was an excellent, excellent cash register, fantastic billing tool, horrible clinical tool. And the pajama time was destroyed. So it used to be I'd go home and play with my kid. Now I'd go home and chart for 3 hours because listen, here's the thing, and you know this, you deal with doctors all the time. We're type A lunatics that are compulsive obsessive, and I put that backwards on purpose, because we're more compulsive than obsessive, and we want to make sure we do everything we can, and if you give us the capacity to click boxes and tell us that it's important, we will go home and do it all night. And that is not good. It's not good for patient care. It's not good for our care. And then we burn out. So I felt like I needed help. When I had house staff and residents doing the clicking, suddenly I felt liberated to spend time face-to-face with patients, to make phone calls to patients, to do things that mattered. Instead, when they took my house staff away at the end, because we were the whole place was understaffed, talk about capability.
Yeah.
Suddenly I was incapable. It was all the documentation, all the handling, the phone calls from nurses who didn't understand the documentation and the order set had duplications in it, and it was creating tons of busy work, and the social worker was paging me. You didn't fill out the right click box on the SNP that says it's okay to discharge them and so on. And it devastated me. I felt it was my fault, and part of the burnout is a lack of professional accomplishment. You feel like I'm a loser.
No matter what you do, it's never enough.
You know what doctors do is they just work harder.
Yeah.
They don't work smarter. They just keep working harder. Nurses do the same thing. That's what we do. So that's what I felt is if the IT hadn't made me feel less capable, then I could have stayed in that role because it was a, and if I had mentoring with the house staff and a mentor for myself. So I needed leadership. I didn't have it. I needed to mentor others. I no longer got to do that. I needed IT to get out of the way instead of getting in the way. I didn't have that. And all those things colluded to make me, force me to start putting videos on YouTube and become ZDogMD. It's almost like an evil superhero that emerged out of chaos. Mm-hmm. And now, only now am I starting to see the pieces come back together, having done the clinic, having focused with corporations that actually care about making it better, mm-hmm. and admit that it is a struggle and it's hard and there's no magic bullet. And that's my long answer to your short question.
Well, let's wave a magic wand and say we fix the IT problem. We're not there yet, but let's just say that we could do that. What else do caregivers need in order to do what they need to do?
We need the regulatory stuff to get out of the way of the patient care stuff. Mm-hmm. So the regulatory stuff ought to say, we want outcomes that matter to that patient. Yeah. So you figure out what those are and you attain them, and we'll give you the space to do that, and the IT will support you in figuring out what matters to a 62-year-old Hispanic woman mm-hmm. Who has diabetes, who wants to see her child graduate high school mm-hmm. and be ambulatory with full feet and everything. Yeah. Okay, well then that means we control sugars this way, we get her on this regimen, we support her with health coaching, we look at the social determinants of health, and I need the capability to do that. So it means I need a team that supports me.
I love that. So I hope you noticed that I've just become the interviewer here.
I love it. It takes a lot of stress off my plate.
But what you've just described is exactly what I think the research that I and my team have been doing, which is if we have providers, caregivers who are capable, they can make their patients capable. They can provide the tools and resources to their patients to help them do their jobs. That woman with diabetes who wants to see her daughter graduate from high school, there's a lot that rests within the physicians and the nurses' purview that they just don't have time to think about right
yeah.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are resources that are being spent on things that could be better deployed elsewhere. And that's what my research focuses on, and that's what I think we at Athena are really kind of focused on helping to push forward.
I love it. And you guys gotta understand, like, Athena supported us, EHR State of Mind, a video about how much EHR suck. They supported us, Lose Yourself, a video about overthrowing the current system and building health 3.0. Like, if these guys don't really get it, I don't know who really does. Tom, you got some comments from the gallery?
Max says, we are dehumanizing healthcare. Everyone is more focused on preventing from getting sued and meeting regulation compliance than on treating patients.
I can't argue that in health 2.0, those are the endpoints that matter to health 2.0. However, in 3.0, repersonalized, technology-driven, team-based, outcomes-paid care, it's going to transform. It's going to change. We're going to transcend that and take the best aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think big data is going to change how we practice. Yeah. AI will. That's why I was so fascinated with the Athena Network and Athena Insights and grabbing this data, because you have a bag of data. Mm-hmm. You know, so does Epic, so does Cerner, so does, mm-hmm. but what you do with that data is what matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, we talk a lot about being able to do research on healthcare in the wild. Mm. You know, because we've got this single, wonky term, single instance of software, you know, we can do apples to apples comparisons across mm-hmm. all of the providers on our network, and it really does. Like you talked about antibiotic.
Yeah, misuse. Yeah,
one of the really cool projects that we did last year was we looked at the time of day at which a prescription was written, and we looked at the percentage of time or the likelihood that a provider would write a prescription for an antibiotic for a condition.
A viral
antibiotics are never, right. are never indicated.
A cold,
for.
Yeah.
The later in the day that prescription was written, the more likely it was that you would see something written for an inappropriate condition. So, the idea that you can actually see decision fatigue.
Yeah.
At the front lines of healthcare through our network.
Yeah.
It's like, that's why I came to this company.
where are my docs, my nurse practitioners, my PAs yeah. out there? How many times at the end of the day you're just tired of fighting that
yeah.
fight? And you're like, you know what, here, don't fill it unless you're not getting better. Well, of course they're going to fill it. and they're going to take it. And it, decision fatigue, that's a great word. I like that. It sounds like
I
an MBA.
I didn't make it up.
You didn't make it up? Was it your Harvard business friends? Because, you know, I just don't. I wish I had gotten into Harvard. I never did.
Yale's better.
Snap. Mm-hmm. It's on right now. Tom, any other comments, or do you think we're...
I think we can wrap up, but I do want to address this comment by Brian King. He says, ugh, take the blinders off and wake up. The extra burdens make us feel like Atlas on a daily basis. All these new ideas just add more weight to the current load. Ooh. So I think Brian is feeling stuck in the 2.0.
Well, yeah, I mean, right? That's the 2.0 model is like, oh, well, you know what? If we just add another box, that'll fix the other boxes that we had to click. Right. And then if we add a third box, that'll fix the fact that now there's another box. That's not what these guys are saying. And I think you had said quite clearly, we're not there yet. It is a process. And here's the thing, and this is something that I firmly believe in. We as clinicians, as frontline providers, have abdicated our duty to make this stuff better. We have ceded it away because we're so busy, we're so incapable of taking care of our patients, that we've stepped away and said, let these guys do it, and then we'll just complain about it. We can't. We have to be a part of the solution. We have to be a part of the conversation. That's why, you know, we're here in Boston to have this conversation with people that can actually make a difference. So I want you guys to hit like, hit share on this podcast and share it. Tell people, look, whether or not you like a particular EHR, and I know there's probably tons of comments of this EHR is good, this one's not good. Oh, I use Meditech. I don't care about that. I care about how do we transcend that and get to 3.0. And that's what I think you guys are pushing towards doing.
Absolutely.
We're gonna
free up doctors and nurses and care providers to do what matters most so that they can do what they need to do and want to do for patients. That's our goal as a company.
Which is binge watch Silicon Valley.
100%.
100%.
Yeah.
Jessica Sweeney Platt.
This
has
awesome.
Been such
thank
a
you.
Pleasure. Thank you
I
for spending
this.
Your time with us. And thank you to Athena Health for supporting this month. It's been tremendous. And thank you, ZPAC, for being dope. Stay tuned. We're in Boston. Logan's going to throw some ish into the harbor Woo. And probably get arrested. Yeah. Tom Heineberg.
Y'all need to share this one because this was a good conversation.
And I'm going to take this for a second because Logan Stewart, thank you for running this.
Oh, thank you.
We're here at Athena's dope studio, and despite all their fancy equipment, we're like, we're going on the phone.
Yeah.
Hope y'all don't mind. And Logan, to ride us out.